And joining me right now here on the Mark Moses Show to go over the latest on NFL free agency, especially with the Jacksonville Jaguars. They made so many moves on Monday. This guy does a great job covering the team. He's my good friend John Ferry with Sports Now. John, how you doing today?
Mark, doing great and very surprised. I did not expect the Jaguars to make as many moves as they did in day one of what they call legal tampering. None of these moves can be official till Wednesday, but it was a whirlwind day on Monday up in Jacksonville in Northeast Florida.
Let's start with the trade, where they gave a late-round pick, I think sixth round, to get Mac Jones from New England. What did you think of this move?
That was a mystery to me. Now, and that was Sunday when that news broke. And you're right, a sixth-round pick. The reasoning behind it, or from what we've heard, is C.J. Beathard, who's currently the Jaguars' backup, has been banged up the last couple of years here and there. And the Jaguar management feels better with Mac Jones, a younger backup coming in, has played more in the NFL than C.J. Beathard from New England, backing up Trevor Lawrence. For those that don't know, Mac Jones is from Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. He played at the Bowles School in high school. So from that perspective, I like it. Honestly, I don't think it's going to be much of anything, though, Mark, because if the Jaguars have to bring in Mac Jones at quarterback this upcoming season, that means they are not doing very good, or Trevor Lawrence got hurt, one or the other. But that one surprised me. I'm going to be honest. I don't mind giving up a sixth-round pick. Normally, you don't get much out of that. I know Tom Brady was picked in the sixth round, but normally you're not going to get anybody that's really going to be productive down there. But that did surprise me. That caught me off guard Sunday when that news broke.
All right, let's go over that draft because I do this all the time. Mac Jones traded for a sixth-round pick. Was he a bust then with New England?
I would say yes, because he was picked in the first round the same year, I believe, as Trevor Lawrence.
Yes.
I believe he was up there 3 years. Lawrence has been here three, and I would say yes. Looking at his overall record, I know that's kind of harsh for Mac, but 18-25 as a starter, and I believe he might have been in the league 4 years. I think he's been in the league actually one more year than Trevor. But to answer your question, from the New England perspective, I think it was a bust.
Okay, he was in that draft. So Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. Those are the five taken in the first round. What's interesting, you look at Trevor Lawrence. He wins a playoff game 2 years ago. They're 8-3 last year. Then they collapse. There's kind of this stigma right now where people are questioning if Trevor Lawrence is good or not. Do you feel that way as well when you look at number 16?
I do. I still have confidence it's going to work out, but yes, I do, for some of the reasons you brought up. My biggest issue with Trevor Lawrence is not the record or even the collapse last year. It's the turnovers. He's got to secure the ball better. I mean, he has more takeaways or more turnovers, I guess I should say, than any other player since he's come in the league, Mark, back in 2021.
It's wild.
The first year, you could maybe put part of that on Urban Meyer, but the last two, you can't. And so, especially the fumbles. So, I can see where there's questions about Trevor. Those names you rattled off, though, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Justin Fields, I would still rather have Trevor than any of those names that came out of that draft, though. Zach Wilson. So, I still feel better about where the Jags are with Trevor. They're not where they want to be, but I feel better than having one of those other guys you just rattled off from that draft.
Okay, who did the Jaguars pick up on offense? We'll start there, you know, yesterday.
The big pickup, believe it or not, normally a center doesn't create a lot of buzz, but with the Jags' offensive line and the struggles Luke Fortner had, who was the center the past 2 years, that was a must. And I think Trent Baalke hit a home run there, getting Mitch Morsey from Buffalo, a veteran who's played with Kansas City and Buffalo. So he's had experience with both Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. And I think he'll be a guy that will be able to give them some push up in the middle of that offensive line and help in short yardage situations, which is where the Jags failed miserably last year. And then they doubled down on the Buffalo Bills yesterday because they followed that up with the wide receiver, Gabe Davis, who's a Fernandina Beach native, by the way, from Northeast Florida, and went to UCF down your way. So a lot of folks are going to recognize that name and has been with the Bills the past 4 years. I like that addition, too, especially since at the current time, Calvin Ridley looks like he won't be part of the Jags next year. So those two guys from Buffalo, I think, were huge additions yesterday. And they went out and got a special teams player late in the day from the Baltimore Ravens, Duvernay. That might be a name that was missed late in the day, but he's more of a special teams return specialist. The Jags are going to lose Jamal Agnew. I think that move pretty much solidified that. So those three moves, but specifically the center, Mitch Morse, I think, was really the most important of all the moves the Jags made yesterday, and specifically on offense.
Okay, defense, what did they do?
They went out and they got Darnell Savage, a safety from Green Bay, who I think was necessary. A week ago, they cut Rayshon Jenkins. They made some cuts on their defense and also cut Darius Williams, a corner. After getting Darnell Savage, they also doubled down on Ravens yesterday and got Ronald Darby, who's a veteran corner that has been with Buffalo, coincidentally, prior to Baltimore. I don't know if Darby's going to be the starter. I still think the Jags are going to go in the draft and get a corner next month, but they needed some help there because Trey Herndon, who currently was the Jaguars' nickel, is also not under contract. So I think those were two moves after what the Jags did last week, releasing Rayshon Jenkins, releasing Darius Williams. They needed some help in that secondary. They went out with Darby and Savage and addressed some of those holes yesterday as well.
Are you happy with Trent Baalke right now?
I'm a lot happier than I was 48 hours ago, I'll say that. Last week, we were scratching our head what he was doing. We wanted him to make the long-term deal with Josh Allen. They wound up franchise-tagging him. And the ramifications of that were you're probably not going to be able to retain Calvin Ridley, even though there are reports out there, believe it or not, Mark, that the Jags are still negotiating with Calvin Ridley. But overall, I'm happy with what Trent Baalke did in this free agent period. Calvin Ridley aside, I would like to see him be part of the Jags next year, too. I doubt that's going to happen at this point, but we'll see. But I like the additions they made, addressing both the offensive line, the defensive secondary, bringing a receiver in, another weapon for Trevor, and a special teams player as well. So, and they did initially bring a kicker in as well, but he decided not to come, Will Lutz. That was reported midday yesterday, and then he pulled out of the agreement. Because, again, for those listening, just to reiterate, none of this becomes official until 4 o'clock tomorrow. We're in what they call the legal tampering period right now. So a player could have a change of heart and decide not to go through with it, which is what happened with Will Lutz, the place kicker. But overall, I think the Jags did a great job, accomplished a lot yesterday.
All right, you bring up Josh Allen. Give him the franchise tag. Did you like that move?
No, I would have liked to have seen them go ahead and iron out a long-term deal because he's a guy that came back on Show Us Earn It, and he got 17.5 sacks last year, which was the franchise record for a single season. And at this point, I think the Jags should have found a way to iron out a long-term deal with him already. Now, they've ensured that he's going to be on the team next year. I like that aspect of it. And I say this not knowing what Josh Allen's side is asking for, in fairness to Trent Baalke and the Jags management. But I would have loved to have seen them get that out of the way, Mark. And that way you could have franchise tagged Calvin Ridley. And that would have ensured having both of them on the team. Right now, that's not where you're at. But I'm definitely happy that Josh Allen is going to be a part of this organization moving forward. That was a piece the Jags could not afford to let go. No way, no how could they let him out the door.
All right, let's go around the NFL here with John Ferry Sports Now. What did you think of Russell Wilson to the Steelers for like $1 million?
I think the Denver Broncos are getting it in the you-know-what. And the reason I say that is because they're going to have to pay Russell Wilson close to $38 million next year for him to go play on the league minimum with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it's a steal, no pun intended, for the Steelers, because you're getting him for just a little bit north of $1 million. Russell Wilson can afford to do it because he's getting $40 million next year, regardless of where he plays. Denver has to pick up the difference of what they would have owed him if they had kept him in Denver for the 24 season. But I think the Steelers got a guy that could be the starter. We'll see. Russell Wilson needs a revival in his career. The last couple of years have not been great for him, the obvious. So we'll see. But I think the Steelers had nothing to lose there.
What about Kirk Cousins getting $100 million guaranteed by the Falcons?
I think Kirk Cousins' agent should win the Oscar for the best agent all time, since it's Oscars week, Mark, because I was amazed Kirk Cousins got that kind of money again at his age. He's going to be 36 years old when the season starts next year. And if you look at his career from Washington to Minnesota to now Atlanta, he puts up some gaudy numbers in the regular season, and he has some big games, no doubt, but he has done absolutely nothing in the postseason. He has one postseason win in his career. That is it. Yet, looking at the size of his bank account, you would never know it. I thought the Falcons would go get Justin Fields, is what I thought, in a trade with the Bears, as you're intimately familiar with. They elected to pay Kirk Cousins this money, and if he fulfills the contract, he'll be 40 years old at the end of it. We'll see, but again, I think Kirk Cousins' agent is the man of the year right now for all the money he's been able to get Kirk from these different teams.
Is this where the commissioner should step in and be like, wait, what? What are you giving Kirk Cousins? Like, come on. I would if I'm the commissioner. How about you?
I'm not sure I would. I mean, it's the free market. I wouldn't have done it. I'm not going to fault Kirk Cousins for it. But I will say this, it drives up the price of other quarterbacks. So I know where you're coming from there. I don't see the commissioner stepping in and doing that. But I tell you what, it just shows how desperate teams are to get quarterbacks. Right. Because, again, I don't know what the Falcons are exactly thinking. Because, yeah, maybe a year or two, Kirk Cousins is a stopgap. But that's an expensive stopgap. So, but I'd probably let the free market play out myself on it.
Okay. Would you rather have Kirk Cousins for $40-plus million or Baker Mayfield for $30 million next year?
I'd rather have Baker Mayfield for $30 million. And I wouldn't have said that a year or two ago, but the way he looked last year, well, first, Baker's younger, number one. And I'm always wanting to go with the younger guy if they're close in performance. So I would rather be Tampa Bay than I would the Atlanta Falcons. I guess that's the way I'll put it, and I would rather have Baker Mayfield at this point in time in their careers.
We're at John Ferry Sports Now. All right, one more. Running backs, they're all changing. Jacobs to Green Bay, Swift to the Bears. Saquon, he's going to the Eagles. What were your thoughts, buddy?
That was, where is the running back moving to next, or whatever the bad way to put it. But, yeah, I was amazed by that. Saquon Barkley got $37 million to go to Philadelphia. I think he's the best of the running backs that moved. Josh Jacobs went from the Las Vegas Raiders to Green Bay. Tony Pollard's another one that moved from Dallas to the Tennessee Titans. Devin Singletary went from the Texans to the New York Giants. And DeAndre Swift went from Philadelphia to the Chicago Bears. So I was amazed by that. I would think, wouldn't these teams just be better off sticking with the guy they've got instead of these running backs moving all around like this? I mean, you can debate that, but I've never seen that much running back movement and free agency in a single day in my life, Mark. Maybe there's been a day that with more movement. I don't remember it. Good for the running backs in an age where running backs aren't as valued as much and aren't getting as paid as much. They got paid yesterday. Those guys got their money, so good for them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That Pollard move to the Titans, you got to do it. You have to get paid. You have to. You can't, especially if you're a running back, you can't take the pay cut. You got to get paid because you could be gone tomorrow. All right, before I let you go, Florida Gator basketball team, which we hyped last week after they beat Alabama, did they then over the weekend in their finale for the regular season, did they lose at Vandy?
They did. They showed up as flat as a banana peel. The lulls continue. An inexcusable loss, first of all. You can't lose to Vanderbilt. No disrespect to them. They were 3-14 in the conference, Vanderbilt, going into that game. And Florida got out-rebounded on the offensive glass. I mean, big time. At one point late, it was 19-6 in favor of Vanderbilt on the offensive glass, which was really the difference in that game. But that's a game that's going to cost Florida a seed in the NCAA tournament, in my opinion. I think they were looking at a 6 seed, probably going to be on the 7 line when the bracket comes out Sunday night. We'll see. But and the more concerning thing for me, and I think for Todd Golden and the Gators moving forward, Mark, would be this team is only 7-9 away from Gainesville. They're 14-1 at home, but 7-9 everywhere else. Well, at last check, there are no more games in Gainesville. So that would concern me if I'm a Florida Gator right now, because the way they've played on the road would say you're not going to go very far in the big dance or in Nashville. They'll play Thursday night, tips around 9:30, probably closer to 9:45. You know how these goes in tournament games. When you're the last game, the game before you normally runs long and you have to wait another 15 to 20 minutes. So it's going to be a late night for Florida Thursday. They'll play the winner of Georgia-Missouri on Wednesday. If Florida's able to get out of Thursday night, they're looking at Alabama on Friday night. So I don't think Florida's going to beat Alabama a second time after what I saw in Gainesville, even though they totally ran them out of the gym that night. I think Alabama's going to be sitting there waiting for them and rested. So I think that Vanderbilt game is concerning, not just from a one-loss record-wise, but from the fact that you just can't lose games like that, even if you're on the road. That was just inexcusable, that one.
Would you bet on the Gators in the tournament?
No way. No. I would not bet anything on them. They are so heckle and jide right now. I mean, they could make a run, and they could be in the Sweet 16, but having seen what I've seen and the lulls that they have, specifically on the road more than at home in the second half when they have a lead, would scare me. So I would not bet on the Gators in this tournament coming up.
Would you like to see LSU and South Carolina women's basketball meet again in the tournament so they could beat each other up again?
Well, I don't want to see a fight, but I'd love to see them play again. I mean, they've been two very competitive games with South Carolina winning both of them. It got out of hand the final couple of minutes, and to Dawn Staley's credit, the coach of South Carolina, she apologized about that in the post game. But I wouldn't mind seeing the matchup again. I would love to see it in the Final Four.
And bonus with John Ferry, have you gone to a Gator baseball game yet?
I have not. I hopefully will get a chance in a couple of weeks when they play Florida State in Jacksonville. They actually play Florida State in Gainesville tonight. They always play FSU 3 times in a season. But I have not been able to get by yet, so I'm looking forward to seeing Kevin O'Sullivan and the Gator baseball program, which right now, arguably, of the team sports is the best one in Gainesville year in and year out. I think it's hard to argue against that. They were national runner-ups a year ago, and they're always a national contender every single year. And I think they will be in June this year as well.
I don't know if I could stay up for these Gator basketball games. What time did you say again? 9:30 at night?
It will be not between 9:30 and 9:45 on Thursday night. Oh. And if they win, by the way, it will be the same time again on Friday night. They are scheduled to play the last game of the day Thursday and Friday if they advance to Friday.
All they had to do was win that game at Vandy, and I'd have some love for them. But we're going to find out. John Ferry, Sports Now, thanks for your help and have a great day.
Mark, as always, an honor and a privilege. Thanks for having me.